Members, thanks for coming. We're going to really push hard to actually be on time, so we will honor the punctual. A couple of housekeeping notes for members and staff. A reminder, tomorrow Wednesday, we do not have a committee meeting at this time. And instead, you all have seen the paperwork. We're invited to this One Minnesota conference over at the University of Minnesota at the Humphrey School. And I'll get into it a little bit later, but we actually kind of have a bit of a sneak preview of some of the things that you'll hear at that conference with our guest this morning. So no committee tomorrow. We've also included in the handouts an agenda for that One Minnesota conference. And just note, there's certainly multiple speakers and topics that cross into our area of jobs and economic growth. So I encourage you all to go. I also have an introduction. We were not able, I don't think he was even here last week, but we have a committee intern. Am I saying it right, or should we call you a page? Committee page, Nick Anderson. Wave, Nick. So staff and members, this is another one of our all-stars that'll help us get through the session. So welcome, Nick. Thanks for helping out. So on with the agenda. This morning, I wanted to just kind of continue some of the discussion that we started last week about kind of the current state of the economy, the current state of Minnesota's economy, and what we need to think about as a legislature, as policymakers, how to make this a more attractive place for job creators, with a particular focus on the private sector. So I have come across throughout some of my years here the two gentlemen at the table at the other end, and both of them have a lot to offer, but more just one guy today. So I'm going to just turn it over to Doug Baker, who wears several hats. Besides being a constituent of mine, he's burdened with that. But Doug runs a small little company down the road here called Ecolab. So he might make a comment or two about what it's like to run an international business from downtown St. Paul. He's been the lead CEO on the Minnesota Business Partnership. And so you see Charlie Weaver on the other side of the table there. So Doug has worn that hat, which is kind of the largest companies in Minnesota, the 100 largest, and some of their concerns from a policy standpoint. And then probably the newest group that has done the most, some might describe it as a think tank. I don't want to characterize it much further, Doug, but it's the Itasca Project. And you guys have done a lot. This group has done a lot, and I think they're trying to raise their profile even further. So Doug's going to be making a presentation tomorrow at the One Minnesota Conference, and we kind of get to sneak preview it with him today. So he's got a PowerPoint that is included in your handouts. So I think with that, Mr. Baker, I'll turn it over to you. Welcome to the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee, and thanks for coming.
All right. Well, thank you. Look, it's a pleasure to be here. I do have a PowerPoint presentation. I will try to make this somewhat conversational. I guess the plan is to have questions at the end of this presentation. And to pick up where Jeff left off, Itasca has been a group that has met for quite a long time and worked on a number of initiatives. The initiative we're talking about here was really a project that started about 15 months ago. And it was really designed to look at the competitiveness of Minnesota generally and of the MSP region specifically. And so we had a lot of help from McKinsey, pro bono, the consulting group, to gather data from a number of the regions so that we can do a good job trying to understand what our advantages are, how do we leverage them, what are some of the shortcomings, and what do we need to do to further enhance our ability to create growth and jobs in this region. So let me walk through and share with you what we learned. And this presentation breaks out into three basic components. One, why change and what are the issues that we are looking at? What drives you to think that we might want to do things differently? Two, what's important to creating jobs, and then what might the strategies be for Minnesota and MSP specifically going forward. So we all know this story, and it's an important one, which is Minnesota, the Twin Cities, have really a long track record of success if you look back, whether it's on income per capita growth, GDP per capita. We outpace the Midwest and the U.S. average in both of these over a long period of time. We've got some great assets. We have a very strong big business base, really quite outsized, and it is a very significant advantage. So my perspective, running a large company, there is always conversation that all jobs are created in small companies. There are a lot of jobs in small companies. Big companies create a lot of small companies. We have a lot of companies in Minnesota that are formed specifically to meet needs of an Ecolab or a General Mills or a 3M. And that's a very important component and one of the reasons I think the state does so well. And so how do you create value? At the end of the day, I'll steal George Buckley's line from 3M. You're either going to dig something out of the ground, you're going to grow something, or you're going to invent and make something. And there are a lot of service businesses that are very important, but at the end of the day, you have got to have an economy based on fundamental value creators. You do not have a long-term sustainable growth engine. And so it's very important, we feel, that we continue to do that. We are lucky that we have such a strong base today. We have, in part because of the university, but also because of the companies that we just highlighted, have terrific research and human capital in this area. And it is one of our real strengths. We have a more educated population. It is viewed around the country as one of the real assets of this community, and so it is important. And as a person competing and headquartered here, we do have access to talent, and that is important moving forward. We just have to make sure we continue to do that, both by developing our own, but remember, we are what? I don't know, less than 2% of a country that's less than 5% of the world's population. So we are also going to have to be in a position where we can attract talent to this community as well if we're going to continue to succeed and go forward. We've got great quality of life. At least all of us have bought into this story. So I came over here in a snowstorm. I don't know. We would not call this a Class A recruiting day. But look, we've got, as we all know, we've got terrific sports. We've got terrific theater. We've got terrific arts, great museums. A number of amenities that I think are wonderful. And as I describe it, we have 90% of what a huge metro area might offer and about 20% of the hassle factor to get to it. And so it's something you take for granted. I have lived in probably a dozen cities now in my life, most of it here, but I will tell you it is a real asset also. But we can overemphasize it at times. So with all that said, and with our storied success and track record, if you look at the more recent period, we are losing ground. And this is the reason I think it's very important for us to make sure that we understand what's happening. And so if you look at job creation, we are creating jobs at a slower rate than the national average. And all this can tell you is if you keep this up, this is going to become a real problem for us. Because you either grow or you shrink. It is very hard to have status quo. And if we don't get our cycle back on a virtuous path, this will end up, I think, causing real problems for the state as a whole and for the region also. Also, as you look at it, our business rankings, coincidentally, have also gotten worse. So these are two, Milken's and Forbes, and these rankings are really selected purposely because they didn't, in our minds, overemphasize quality of life measures. So you can get some measures that sometimes overemphasize, and the reason we didn't want to do that was because when you're attracting people to a community, everybody thinks where they live has got great quality of life or they wouldn't live there, right? And they don't rank it very highly until they get here. It's not a great attractant, it's a great retention tool. So the old adage is it's very difficult to get people here. It's also very difficult to get them to leave here. So quality of life, we don't want to overemphasize when we measure. So Forbes and Milken, as you can see, our 03 and 09 rankings deteriorated quite significantly in both areas. So what are some of the findings? Well, number one is we've got a pretty challenging business climate. Most of these facts are, frankly, Minnesota facts, but they're also obviously germane to the region also. So if you look at our tax burden and the cost of doing business, right, we're 38th out of 50. The Tax Foundation ranked Minnesota 43rd out of 50th on its business tax climate. And we are also, if you look at MSAs or the large metro areas, we are ranked almost at the bottom in terms of labor cost. Now, where the labor cost gets expensive really isn't at the upper end. It is at the lower end. And so some of this is probably union rates and some of the other stuff. And also we've got some skill labor and an older workforce. So there's a number of things contributing here. But we have high labor costs. I mean, it's a fact. And so part of this gets into an issue when you start looking to attract talent and do some of the things. We also have a high cost to business, as we alluded to. So there's business climate issues, ratio of tax benefit to tax burden. Our corporate tax rate is the third highest in the country at around 10%. If you look at our best states for doing business at Forbes, we rank at 30th. We've got the most stringent health care insurance mandates in the country, high costs in a number of areas from an employment standpoint. And this is somewhat mitigated by the fact that we got high quality of labor, but not completely. And so when you look at the facts and you start saying, okay, I'm a business and I'm going to consider where I'm going to locate a new opportunity, all of these things go into consideration. How easy is it going to be to build a facility? So what's a regulatory environment? Not necessarily the rules all the time, but how easy is it to navigate? We want to know what the rules are, and then we want to be able to meet the requirements quickly, get our permitting, and move forward. So it's not that we mind regulations all the time. What we mind is regulations that are opaque and very difficult for us to navigate. What's the cost of labor? What's the cost of property taxes? Right? What are the corporate tax rates, et cetera? And what are the personal tax rates as well? All go into factor. And so when you look at the taxes, they can be among the highest in the country. Corporate income tax we talked about, sales tax, while it's only on part, it's high because it's only on part of our taxable stuff. Personal income tax rate remains quite high, and corporate property tax index is also an area. So that's one of the findings, right, that we've got from a product standpoint, what I would call a mixed bag. High quality of life, very high quality of labor, but also quite high costs in a difficult regulatory environment, I mean, if you want to put it. So that's kind of the product side. If you want to look at then what are we doing with this product and how well are we merchandising it and marketing it, we also think we have some significant issues as we go through. We really have lacked a coordinated business development effort. We have a number of organizations, but nobody is stepping up and taking responsibility for, if you will, driving job growth. And so that's something that we want to remedy, and we'll get into that. So let's talk job growth for a minute. And as we ended up thinking about it, we really broke it down into three key components. How do we retain the companies that are here? How do we convince the companies that are here to continue to add jobs here as opposed to adding them elsewhere, be it in other parts of the U.S., or other parts of the world? How do we also create new companies? And do we have the right environment for, if you will, business formation? Almost of all the corporations that we listed that are now in the Fortune 500, the vast majority started here or incubated here. So how are we doing on that score going forward? And then third, how do we attract new companies or existing companies to move from where they are today to here? Either a division, a distribution site, a call center, whatever, a part of that company or the whole company. So as we broke this down, much as I just alluded to, we really thought about it in two forms. The top, which we call the environmental levers, I will call, if you will, kind of the product that the state offers in terms of business environment. So what's the cost of doing business? What's the quality of life? What's the human capital and the cost of that capital? What's the infrastructure situation? And how are we in terms of innovation and startup capabilities? Of these aren't all equal. The cost of doing business and the human capital are the two most important to companies as they seek places to move and to start businesses. Down below, which we call process levers, is how do we market, merchandise, and leverage the attributes at the top. That is really getting down to, do we have a unified vision? Do we know how to talk about the region? Do we know how to talk about our strengths and position, right, either Minnesota or the Minneapolis-St. Paul region when we go out and communicate? Do we have somebody making the calls, presenting the case, showing up and talking to the people who help companies decide where to relocate? And have we specific sector focus and then ultimately a marketing campaign? So as we assess these two areas, here's how it lined up when we compared this to major metros around the United States. One, we give ourselves red, which is not positive, right? Red in terms of cost of doing business for all the reasons that I talked about over the last few minutes. Quality of life and human capital are strengths. Infrastructure and innovation and startup, frankly, we consider neutrals. They're neither negative or a positive at this point in time, but they're on the scale. When we look at process levers and how are we doing, i.e., do we have a unified regional vision? Do we have central governance about how we want to go out of economic development? Do we have a marketing campaign? We really got low scores because we aren't doing anything from a coordinated standpoint, specifically when we line up and look at other regions that are doing it. So with that, we really came down to three focus areas. One, we need to address the cost of doing business. Now, this isn't going to be the specific focus of the Itasca group, which is going to branch out into two specific work groups. But the cost of doing business work is going to be done principally from either the business partnership, the chamber, or others, which really are going to do a lot of the work in terms of merchandising what the statistics are, what do we need to do, how can we create a better environment to grow jobs as we move forward. We also need to develop a regional vision, strategy, and approach to drive economic development. At this point in time, we would give ourselves very low grades on doing a good job here, and we want to fix that. And thirdly, if there was, I would say, a huge surprise out of the learnings, we are lousy in terms of creating an environment for entrepreneurship. And this is somewhat of a surprise. To me, we have all the tools that it would take to be great at business formation. We have great R&D in this area. We've got a great university that does a lot of work. We've got great human capital. We just talked about it. We have a history of innovation in this state, and we got plenty of money. So what is it that's in the way, right? We've got environmental, cultural. This is a very difficult place to get capital for business startups. There is a culture where failure is frowned upon, which is not the type of environment you want if you're in a startup area. We are not doing a very good job leveraging the university research and turning it into jobs and into businesses in Minnesota. So this is a whole area that is very important and needs to be explored. So the Itasca group broke into two pieces, a group that's going to work on the entrepreneurial part and a group that's going to work on the regional vision, strategy, and economic development. I am on the second. And so the rest of my conversation is going to be about that second area, not about the entrepreneurship piece of this formation. So getting after angel investor credit and all that is important there, but that alone is not going to go solve this problem, but it is an important first step as we go through it. So let's talk strategies for greater MSP. So this really walks down the branching out into two specific areas. And I'm going to talk on the right side of this chart. We are launching a regional economic development partnership. We will come up with a better name, I promise you, because it's very difficult to say. And this is a private-public partnership. We estimate that it's going to take about $4 million a year to make this thing work. We anticipate raising this money, and we've raised a lot of it already and have a lot of this in hand, through both public entities, about 30%, and 70% from private entities, which means companies like Ecolab and General Mills and Cargill and U.S. Bank and the rest. And so why would companies like us pitch in and invest in something like this? I guess it really goes twofold. One, you got to make sure that your nest is well taken care of. We all, I think, and one of the real strengths of the Minnesota business community is there is a very strong culture of giving back to this community. I think this is hard to appreciate if you only live in Minnesota, because this is not how it works in the balance of the world or in the balance of the country. And so the companies, and we have asked, we have not heard one no from either a public entity in the MSP or from a private company in terms of contributing to this. And so far, we've raised almost, we've raised about 80% of what we need year one and about 70% of what we need on an ongoing basis, and we're about halfway through, right, our fundraising. I would say that this really is a testament to how important both the companies and the public entities here, the counties, the cities, et cetera, feel that this initiative is in terms of starting to drive growth. We're going to focus on the 13-county MSA definition from a starting point because we need to focus and get after this. And we're going to create a strategy, branding, and marketing. We're going to hire a CEO and get after retention, expansion, and attraction. So here's the launch status. We're in the process of hiring a CEO. We're down to two final candidates. We anticipate having somebody on board here to lead this entity before the end of the first quarter. That's our goal. I would say we're on track. Second, as I mentioned, secure year one investment. We have six counties and 14 cities who are contributing nearly $1 million. All have gotten this approved. This is all in hand. Private sector, we've got over $1.5 million pledged. We have 1 million asks out there. We will end up, I think, over-raising the amount of money that we need in the first year. Nobody has said no. Number three, we're incorporating this entity. We're going to do a 501c3. We've got board governance. We've got a very strong executive committee already agreed to, and we will start broadening the board member to include both the public and the private entities, and then we got to draft rules of engagement, the hardest part, i.e., right, everybody wants to divide the pie up before the pie is out of the oven. So how do you drive economic development? How are we going to work together, cities, counties, right, suburbs, et cetera, in terms of driving this growth, and how are we going to act as one unit as opposed to 14 individual units as we go forward? We have great commitment up front, and the truth will be as we get going, as we move forward on it. So that's what we're doing from a standpoint. Entrepreneurship, and we're also working on driving regional growth by forming this group, getting out, talking to city selectors, right, site selectors, those people who influence companies as to where they put either divisions, right, new entities, startups, et cetera, as we go forward. We think that's an important part to helping drive growth here.
So, and thank you, Mr. Baker, for going through that and going through it quickly. Two thoughts immediately come to mind for me, and I guess the first, a question for you. As you launch this new entity, you know, with a given goal of restarting private sector growth, we have a new governor, we have a new legislature. Where do you see, where do you and your colleagues see or hope to see an intersection with the state, with various state agencies or policymakers, or maybe you're just doing it and hoping that we'll catch up with you?
Well, I think there's a little bit, you know, there's an old adage, you can't sit in your driveway and wait for all the lights to turn green before leaving.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do believe we've gotten to a point where there is a story to market today. We don't believe it's as strong a story as this region and this state can put together and needs to put together. But we need to get out and start marketing the region irregardless of what the state does. Now, can the state influence this and help this? I would say significantly. And when you get down to the cost of doing business and the regulatory environment, and when I talk regulatory environment, I will tell you, I could probably find regulations we don't like, but the main issue is if we're going to have regulations, let's get a process where you can move through, meet the regulations, get approvals on a timely basis. And so really, I would say what needs to be decided, I would say in the state and in the country as a whole, is do we want to partner with business in a way that makes sense for civil society? And we want to be good neighbors. We want to do the right thing. We run chemical plants as well as other plants. We do not want to be polluters. We want to do proper things for our people. And we will adhere and conform to regulation. But tell us what they are. How do we get permits? What do we have to build? What are the wastewater rules going to be? And let us move forward, right? Don't hold us up. And if we're not going to be able to do it, just tell us and we will move and go do it somewhere else. And I think that's exactly the type of environment that we want to create. It's the environment we try to create with our customers. We have rules with our customers, right? They got to buy so many cases. They got to order and we will ship in so many days. They got to pay us within X time. I guess these are our regulations. Not all of them are negotiable with our customers. But we try to make them clear and we try to make sure that we can meet customer needs as we move forward as we go. So I would say that environment, I think, is very important. The other is cost of doing business. And there are a number of things. So I will pick on one. So if you're running a manufacturing operation here, you've got to pay sales tax on all your manufacturing inputs, right? You can go get it back, ultimately. This is not common practice. I mean, this is really kind of extraordinary practice. And all it really is an extra burden on those who are trying to produce here. So do we want manufacturing jobs or don't we want manufacturing jobs? The state's already agreed that they shouldn't get sales tax on manufacturing inputs because you can get it back. But we're asking companies to jump through hoops, right, to go manage this burden, really for no gain other than maybe hopeful slippage, i.e. somebody doesn't ask for it back as you go forward. And so I think there needs to be a process of trying to understand what are we trying to accomplish, right? How do we have this set up? And are we doing things that make sense, or are we adding burden to business that really doesn't benefit anybody in the end, including the state? Right, as we go forward. I can get into the sales tax rate, but I think there was an announcement Monday. It is high. So let me talk, last thing I'll just answer. It's a little broad. We run a global company. We compete in 160 countries. Half of our sales are outside of the U.S. 1% of our sales are in Minnesota. We are headquartered here. We got several thousand people here. So we have 28,000 employees, about 2,400 in Minnesota. Those are our highest paid 2,400 employees, by the way. We have our global R&D center here. And it's a good place to have an R&D center, right? Because of all the reasons I talked about before. But as we compete, and I would say there's a U.S. tax burden that is quite high. So we are competing against a number of foreign companies in foreign jurisdiction. So when I compete against a guy in Europe, on average, they are paying anywhere from 10 to 20% less in tax, like points. I mean, it is dramatic. And so everybody is starting to reduce their corporate tax burdens around the world. And we have conversations here in this country about raising them. It is going to make us so uncompetitive that we can't own these foreign entities if we're not careful. And so we are the only one of the only countries in the world that makes us step up our tax burden on our foreign earnings to the U.S. rate. So if we're taxed at 15% in Switzerland, like all the other companies competing in Switzerland, we have to pay back up to the 35% rate when we bring that money back to the U.S. Swiss companies don't have to do that. UK companies don't have to do that. German companies don't have to do that. China doesn't do that. Right? Nobody does that. And it puts you at a huge disadvantage because it is a major cost burden that U.S. companies have when competing in foreign markets that others don't. And the only reason I put this out there is then there becomes talk about, right, the royalty deduction in Minnesota. And I would say that is not a loophole. Those are monies were there. You take that away, all you do is make Minnesota companies even less competitive when they're competing out there. So we have 1,000 global R&D people here to make us competitive. The state benefits a lot Those people are buying homes, paying property taxes, paying income taxes. We're paying all, right, all the additional costs. It is a great asset to have those people in this state. And I think it should be understood there is a burden everybody needs to pay. I pay taxes, need to pay taxes. I like a nice civil society, too. I'm willing to pay. However, we've got to be very thoughtful about the burdens we're putting on businesses when they need to go compete around the world. My competitors, I have one U.S. competitor I worry about and about 15 other competitors. They are all non-U.S. That's who we worry about. That's who we're competing against. And these guys have huge tax advantages, which means they have more money to reinvest. They can buy companies and pay more than I can when they're foreign-based companies because they will get more of the income, right, to pay for the investment in that company. I got to pay more of it in tax. And so these are the types of things that I think we got to be smart about and not add to that burden from a state standpoint when I think we got an onerous burden from a federal standpoint. Not that I care.
Thank you for that. And I want to invite some member questions and comments, too, but I also thought before I do that, I'd invite Mr. Weaver, if he wants to make any comments, either related to the presentation or otherwise.
Well, Mr. Baker is my, I think Mr. Chair is my boss, too, so he's really smart. Let me just point that out. Why don't I wait, Mr. Chair, and because I know Mr. Baker's got to leave at about 11:30, so right. Why don't I wait until after he goes, and then I can really talk about some stuff.
Okay. Senator Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Baker, Mr. Weaver, thank you for joining us today. And Mr. Baker, thank you for having your company located here in Minnesota and all of the jobs that you've brought to this state. It's truly remarkable that your organization is here. You are a world leader, and we appreciate that you've located your business in the state of Minnesota. So thank you very much. In the last week, in the last committee meeting, we've had conversations about jobs, creating jobs in the state of Minnesota. And what part of the conversation is we don't create jobs without job creators. How do we facilitate, how do we work with our job creators, with our employers, with our companies, small, large, mid-sized companies? And we really appreciate your feedback and the work of the Itasca Project in looking at this. Last week we heard from Grow Minnesota, from the state chamber, and Grow Minnesota looked at how are individual businesses doing, where you are looking at how do we actually grow the jobs and move forward at this point. Your conversation about retention, expansion, and attraction. If we could, and perhaps this could go to Mr. Weaver, as I have talked with businesses around the community, around the area, one of the key indicators of where a business is located, where they choose to locate when they're moving, is where does the CEO want to live? It's quality of life. It's all the other issues, the tax structure, the regulation, but it also is where does the CEO want to live? Could you talk a little bit about the attraction issue and how are we going to go about attracting new businesses to the state so we can create more jobs?
Mr. Baker.
Yeah, I'll give you my perspective. Then, Charlie, I mean, you should offer thoughts, too. You've been thinking about this a long time. You know, look, there are a variety. We went through a number of the factors and talked about them. But certainly, as we look at and contemplate, we have divisions spread throughout the U.S. We have brought some of those divisions here. We have consolidated some of our work here recently. But we've also made choices to do it elsewhere simultaneously. And one of the things that started enabling us to get our minds wrapped around increasing the employee base here was finally the decision to get our tax structure around a single sales factor as opposed to penalizing us for having more employees and more investment in the state, which was a historic corporate tax structure. And so I would say that decision, even though it took a long time to enact, right, it's been taking years and I think won't be fully in effect, as I recall, until 2014. Decisions like that are important to businesses because we want to understand what the cost structure is going to be, what the environment's going to be, et cetera. Now, we also have to bring talent in here if we're going to start businesses and do other things. And so one of our challenges, and I'll be honest, and so this is a current conversation about what the individual tax rate ought to be. So we get into what fair share is, and I think that's a fine conversation, but I'll point out this. People who are salaried, bonused, and incented, like large companies incent their employees, pay full tax burdens. There are a number of upper income jobs that don't pay at exactly the same rate. They all get mixed up. I.e., are you a PE, a hedge fund, are you a private equity? There are different tax structures out there for different jobs. We do not talk about this in a very nuanced way at all. And the reason this is important, I am in the process of recruiting a senior executive that I want to have move to Minnesota. They are coming from Texas. Guess what we're talking about? I'm going to end up probably having to pay 10% more for this person to live here than I would have normally. All right? So that is not an easy decision for companies to make. When you start looking at headquartering divisions here and you start saying I'm going to have to pay a 10% premium for all my people to live here, that becomes a real burden, and that is driven principally because of the tax deltas in the other versus many states. So it really does matter a great deal what our tax rates are. I believe they ought to be progressive. I believe they are, and you got to factor in federal tax rates. You can't just look at a Minnesota tax and start drawing conclusions. That's not what we pay. And that's not how any of my people look at their tax burdens as they come in. I mean, it's just an unrealistic view, I think, of what really happens. We look at the top of the check and the bottom of the check. We don't really attribute it to one place or another, and we try to understand how that tax burden can be managed and everything else, right? Quality of people is very important in terms of business formation. And so there, I think Minnesota's got a standout attribute, but we don't do a very good job merchandising it if we want to go attract new talent. But I think the big holes for the state are we have got to do a much better job creating an entrepreneurial environment. So I think we need much more mini startup facilities. We need a better culture. And we're going to have to harness the power of the university much more effectively than we do today, right, to get after that. But that's an area that needs to be created. So angel tax credits, that type of stuff's important. When you get to the state for attracting businesses, and we had a few examples. One example was Medtronic looking at relocating a plant from California to anywhere else in the country. They ended up in Texas. They had huge contributions from the state to bring that facility into Texas. All right? That money doesn't exist here that I understand. And so, and I know there's all the economists, the states ought not to do this and everything else. And I have nothing to do with Medtronic, but I understand that decision. And Medtronic was quite interested in considering Minnesota for that facility. But it just wasn't, it wasn't even close from an economic standpoint. Cost of labor, property taxes, right? State commitment in terms of helping them get off the ground. So last thing, I had to build a new facility in China, but it's for China. It's not for exporting out of China. It's for China consumption. We basically have plants where we consume products. $55 million investment, we ended up getting nearly $20 million from China. That's what they did to stimulate their economy during the downturn, is they drove stimulation in business investment and wanted people to build more plants and more factories. So I'm just, it's a different approach. I really don't know, I don't have all the facts to tell you that economically was the genius approach, and our approach was mishandled. I don't know that, but that's what we compete against in the world, and it's just a realistic view. And so I think we're going to have to, as a state and a region, understand the world that we compete in today and deal with the realities whether we like them or not, and get out there and be somewhat aggressive in merchandising our attributes, that we have significant attributes, and also work to mitigate cost of doing business, regulatory hurdles, and the like. Otherwise, we're not going to get the results we like.
The only thing I'd add to that, Mr. Chair, Senator Lilly, to your question about does the personal preference of the CEO matter? And, Doug, I'd be interested in what you think, too. My observation, having worked with top executives for the last 8 years of the biggest companies in Minnesota, is that it doesn't matter nearly as much as it used to. When I was growing up in Minnesota, and Doug's also a native Minnesotan, the Pillsbury's grew their business here. The Dayton's grew their business here. We had a lot of CEOs who grew their businesses here and probably stayed here because they love Minnesota. I just don't think that's the reality anymore. I mean, because the board of directors won't allow it, frankly. The boards are looking all over the world, as Doug said, in much more competitive places where they can do business or open businesses or expand businesses much cheaper. Even though they grew up here, they just don't have the power or the authority to keep these companies in Minnesota like they used to when the competition is so strong.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Mr. Baker, I'd thank you for having your company here. My question does focus a little bit on that because I think, you know, all governors in a lot of states and are making initiatives to try and draw business and attract business to their state. And I think, like I spoke earlier at the earlier committee meeting, that we had a Blue Ribbon panel on economic development when I was a mayor of Red Wing, and we talked about the number one takeaway was retention. And I really think that's, you know, we still need to focus on retention and how we grow these businesses. And I think a lot of what you're talking about relates to that. But I'm wondering, of the companies that have left us, like Northwest Airlines merged with Delta. They've got our CEO, but they're no longer here. They're in Atlanta. We've got NSP and Xcel Energy. They're no longer here. They're in Denver. We've got Norwest and Wells Fargo. They're no longer here. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage, they're no longer here. Or, they're not here because of the merger with Northwest. So, you know, they still have major operations here. But I'm wondering, when the home office leaves, what decisions are made or how does that affect the decisions that are made about the major operations? Do we lose something there? Is there that loss of the local tie of, well, you know, our home office is not there. Let's just take and move our jobs elsewhere.
Well, I think it's I think it's a great question. I agree with all three of those examples. You know, and ironically, Norwest bought Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
Right, and then it ends up in another state. The Delta one's not such a surprise. I mean, they bought Northwest, right? The first out of bankruptcy wins in a cruddy industry. I mean, that's what. I mean, it ended up happening, and Delta came out before Northwest. I would say, headquartered here, you think about the contributions of companies. I mean, companies view this, you know, we are no different than anybody else. This is our community, right? So I also know Senator Michelle as, you know, coach of my daughter's soccer team, right?
That's scary, isn't it?
So there, but what I guess the point is, you know, you tend to give back to the communities, you know, where you live. And I would say one of the real advantages is we've got a very diverse business community, and we have a culture in Minnesota that extends beyond the business community, I think into all parts of the community, that you give back to this community. And I do think that is alive and well in the business community as well. So people here and headquartered here, this is where we give our charitable contributions. It's where we serve on nonprofits, right? It's where we coach teams, right? It's where we do all the other pursuits. And when you retire, there's a lot of loyalty here if it works. And I think the same things go on, that, you know, we want to keep, I think the companies headquartered here is a very important part. So retention. We also want the companies to expand here. And I mean, that's the other part. Every one of those, all those companies are quite successful. They are growing. But are they always growing here? And are they putting new operations here? Are they hedging their bets because they're worried about the cost of doing business? They're worried about the environment, right? And those things start becoming, right? Those are the discussions in the board. That if you have all your apples here, is that a smart thing if you're not comfortable with what the environment's going to be in terms of taxation, right? What it's going to be from regulation? Can you continue to expand? And are you smart to start building new business centers elsewhere so that you have options down the road should one area become problematic for you? It's exactly what you would think if you're in the same position, right? Does he go through it?
I've got Senator Kelash next, and a number of members. Hang with me here. Senator Kelash.
I have a couple questions. The first one is, I'm not sure I understood by what you said about bringing international funds back in. How big is the state burden, the tax burden on that? I think it's pretty limited, but...
You know what?
Mr. Baker.
I think right now, you know, it is the state burden. I think there's an 80% reduction. And so the state burden as it stands today, I mean, we would rather have zero, but I think that we are not fighting for zero. What we're worried about is there is often talk that this is a issue and we should get rid of this 80% reduction, right, in what's taxable on the foreign earnings. I would say that would be a mistake in my mind.
So you're really being a little defensive just to keep the status quo?
I call it proactive.
Oh, okay. There we go. Thanks. And the other question is, as you talk about the... need for the state to have funds to help businesses move in, and you know, for example, the $20 million in China and that. Where do you suggest that we raise that money from if we're keeping tax rates low on the business community as it is in business property tax? That money has to come from somewhere to reinvest, and you know, with a fiscal problem that we have. Do you have any suggestions on how we should raise that money, or if there's a way to do it with a limited burden on the states?
Well, hang on, Mr. Baker. Senator Kelash, Mr. Baker was making a point about what other countries do. I don't think he was asking Minnesota
I agree. But he suggested starting a program, so I'm just trying to...
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying that's the environment we compete in.
Yeah.
I will offer this. I am no expert in terms of state funds or how we should do it. However, how we look at it, I would say that is new money to create new money. And if you are investing and enticing somebody to build a new plant here, right, if you're giving away anything, you're probably giving away property taxes that you're not going to collect anyway. If you have investment in capital, you're probably going to see it in new jobs, right, new personal income tax, ultimately create value and create other business opportunities for others. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to me, there is often, I mean, the thing that we've got to distinguish is the number one thing that the state's got to do is get the state growing again, right? It is a very difficult task managing a budget in an inflationary environment with no growth in the top line, right? Okay. Businesses learn it, states learn it, federal government learns it. It's an impossible task. All it is attrition. And so some of this is how are we going to stimulate growth, which I think is, you know, the job here. And so if that money is net new money for net new growth, I would say that can be very wise money to spend, right? Mm-hmm. You have to track it to the investment.
Yeah. Mr. Baker, I've got a couple other members who want to ask questions. Let me throw one in myself. We've had discussion at this table last week and then also even in yesterday's talk about a jobs package, about how, and this is national and even international, how companies are risk averse, how there is, many of them are holding cash, just kind of, I don't want to say hoarding it, but I guess I just did. Mm-hmm. So they're waiting for something. I guess I'd ask you, what do you think they're waiting for? And as we've talked about it, it's, how do we get them to take a risk here? What will improve their confidence? How can Minnesota be a place where they will put some of that money that they're now holding on to and kind of waiting with? And that's a broad question, I know. But do you think that's a fair characterization that there's
Well, I think the stats support it. There is companies went into this downturn in, by and large, in pretty good shape because most of us had gotten our balance sheet in good shape. So if you had a strong balance sheet, you have moved through this very difficult period without as much pain as you would have if you didn't have one, right? Meaning, what's your debt? How much do you have? Do you have cash on hand? Because you couldn't borrow for a while. Right? It was very difficult. What's going to get people to unleash? You know, this is I don't know that I'm the guy that has the answer on what the magic catalyst is. I will tell you this. businesses are here to grow, right? What do we like to do? We like to sell more product. We like to invent products. We end up liking to hire people because we know it's a sign that things are moving forward. We like to invest in capital. That's what we do. And so what we need is, I guess, confidence that this is the time to start investing because we smell and sense that things are about to move forward. I would say broadly, if you look at confidence measures in business community, it's certainly better than it was a year ago. There's more confidence that we're going to have clarity around what tax policy is going to be, right? What regulation policy is going to be, you know, and some of the other stuff. If you go back a year, there were so many unknowns, be it healthcare, be it what tax policy is, what the conversations were. You just sat there and said, until I have clarity, I will likely make a mistake, and I can't afford to make a mistake with a big investment. So, you know, we want some stability, and we want just what are the rules and what are they going to be, and let us get to work and quit putting everything up for question. And I would say we've been going through this as a country. Minnesota can solve some things for some businesses, right? You can't solve all the problems economically for the country. So some of what Minnesota needs is a country to get its act together, too.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman and committee members and Mr. Baker, I'm not in the habit of defending the Pawlenty administration, but this is from the website.
Mark the tape.
This is from the website Positively Minnesota, and it's titled Fortune 500 Companies. We have more Fortune 500 companies per capita than any other state, and that list has grown substantially in the past few years as more and more companies recognize the tremendous advantages of locating in Minnesota. There are 21 Fortune 500 companies in the state, including some of the world's most recognized brands and firms, meaning Minnesota has the seventh most Fortune 500 companies in the nation. Overall, 32 Minnesota companies make the list of Fortune 1000 companies representing a wide variety of industries, including insurance, banking, chemical manufacturing, and food processing. Now, that's coming from the Pawlenty administration, and I'm just interested in some of the things you said, because I think that the corporate tax rate, and you can help me on this, is 9.8%, the income tax rate. And I think by the time you get done with the subtractions and the deductions, you get down to about 3.1%, and that puts us at about 15th in the country, I think. But you said something about 35%. Is that the federal income tax rate?
Corporate tax rate.
Which we can't do anything about in Minnesota.
No, but okay. Nor can we.
No, exactly. So that's something we can't address.
The reason I bring it up is it affects all the companies here, too.
Well,
and
it affects
so when
everybody,
contemplation
it affects
of,
the company in Texas also.
Texas pays zero on corporate tax rate.
The point is, though, that we can do certain things, and you need to help us with that. And, in fact, I actually tried to repeal that sales tax law that you were complaining about 3 or 4 years ago, and I was told by the department that they couldn't do it because it would cost about $50 million and they couldn't fit it into the budget. And so it's not that we haven't tried to do this kind of stuff. But here's my recommendation, because I wanted to be clear about the 35%, because I didn't think that was Minnesota. You said a lot of good things, fix regulations, but tell us which ones, and tell us which ones are onerous and why they don't work. Because when we get a real lot of generalized stuff in these committees and say, okay, we got these problems and these are, but you need to fix the regulations. Well, what are the regulations that are causing you problems? How can we as a state of Minnesota help you? And what are the solutions to these problems? Because to just come in and generally say Minnesota is a bad business climate, and then you read the governor's own webpage, and then you see the Forbes magazine rating Minnesota as the 11th best state in the country to do business, then I get confused, okay? Because I want to help, but I'm not sure what the right information is.
Well, Senator, I guess what I'd offer is, as I did, I think, at the beginning of the conversation,
and I missed
Minnesota
it.
Has a number of great attributes, and I think you listed some of them. But I would also say we can sit here and say we've had a great 30-year run.
I didn't list them. The governor did.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Baker.
Well, I listed them as well. I think I said we had 21 or 22 Fortune 500 companies. We've got a track record over the last several decades of growing GDP per capita and income per capita faster than the U.S. average. But I also said, if you look at recent years, all right, we have slowed significantly and are forming fewer jobs than the national average. And so some of this is understanding what's going on in the near term and what are the implications for us long term. We have an aging workforce in this state. So who's going to end up paying for all this long term if we don't have the people to put to work to pay the taxes and to pay all the other stuff? So if you want to get to specifics, you know, I will go through and we can probably do a better job bringing specific regulations that are problematic.
I think maybe the chairman would like that.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Baker. And Senator Tomasoni, come to the beginning, and you'll hear the full explanation if you're here at the front end of the hearing. But we've asked them to be general, and we've asked them to be broad because it's the first full week of session, and that's what we want this committee is to hear more of a big picture. I absolutely know that we can get into some details on regulations, but I don't believe right now is the time. I kind of want to help set a tone where this committee can see the big picture and then dive down deeper, and I look forward to doing that with you.
Excellent.
I have, depending on Mr. Baker's time, I've got two more members who'd like to ask questions. I wanted to honor your 11:30 commitment, but I have Senator Kreif and then Senator Miller. Senator Kreif.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. Mr. Baker, there's a number of points that you raised that I thought were very good points in what Minnesota could do to improve our business climate, and consequently, along with that, we want to be able to grow jobs here. Can you help prioritize some of those steps that you think need to happen first, second, third? Is there a roadmap to success that you can help us project here? And secondly, my second question is, with your Itasca project, you're looking to do something basically private sector here, and I like what you're doing. Are other states doing similar things, and what are they doing different than you're thinking about doing? Or are you patterning yourself after one of the best in the country, or are we blazing a new trail here? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'll do the second part first. No, we are patterning ourselves after regions that have, if you will, put similar plans in place quite successfully. Not all have been successful, but we are working to pattern ourselves. So it starts with this public-private partnership, making sure we're all on the same page, right? How do we articulate our advantages in getting a team, if you will, or an organization structured to go out and carry the message of why should businesses consider, right, MSP and or Minnesota as a place to put either all their business or part of their business. And we aren't doing that at all. So you can look at Austin, Texas, right? They've had huge success doing this. But you can go closer to home, Kansas City. The Kansas City comment from their regional structure was, ooh, we always hoped you would never do this, because we are probably the competitor they fear the most, but we have been silent, if you will, and just hoping our quality, right, permeates the ether and people just come here. And it just doesn't work that way. And so we need to get out there, we think, and do this. And companies are investing significant dollars along with the local public entities to create and form this group to go do that. What's the roadmap? I think if you got back to the earlier things, we said we had to address three main topics. Cost of doing business. So it certainly does put an eye on, you know, how are we going to raise revenue in this state and do it in a way that still creates the right growth environment. I do not believe those are mutually exclusive. And so there's been a lot of work done on how do you structure your revenue generating activity as a state that also encourages business investment, business growth, and capital formation. I don't believe our structure is designed to do that. And so that gets to, right, tax work that we've done and fiscal policy work that we've done, right, in the partnership, where we've talked about adding taxes in some areas and subtracting them in others, but also trying to understand how do you generate revenue in a way that supports business growth, doesn't harm it. And we've talked about some of the things that we think get in the way potentially. And some have been addressed over time. We talked about doing this regional growth initiative, and then I think there's significant work that the state can partner in creating the right entrepreneurial environment. So that does get into either tax benefits, which I think the state has taken a small step, but also on what are we going to do with the university and what are the other areas. In terms of a list of taxes and regulations, we can get into specifics, but I would tell you, I think there's got to be a decision in the state, and I don't know how else to say this, that we want to grow businesses. And you can't be against business and for jobs. It just doesn't work. And we want to be for good businesses forming good jobs. And I don't know that that really is always, right, how the state comes across. And it's my state, right? I've lived here most of my life. I like it as much as anybody else. But I do not believe the state is fully on board all the time into promoting and driving business success. I think we should be, with all the caveats.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the most part, my question's been answered. I thank both of you for coming in and presenting today. We certainly appreciate that. And my question was just get us specifics again on how can Minnesota become a business-friendly state? Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. For the great presentation, and just to add to what you said, Mr. Baker, about businesses really waiting to see what type of climate is Minnesota going to put forth. Just kind of anecdotally, I was in back in my district this weekend, in past weekend in Rochester. A business owner came up to me and said, "You know, we've been looking at relocating to North Dakota. They've got the balance sheet. They know exactly how much more they would have to hire new people and to expand their business if they were in North Dakota." But I took great heart in this because he said, "We're waiting. We're waiting to see what you're going to do." Mm-hmm. And so I think that is the environment we're in right here, and probably part of it's because while many businesses could enjoy our quality of life here, I think when we get in these economic challenging times, the balance sheet just doesn't allow for that. Mm-hmm. And they really have to make that bottom line work. And so in addition to all those specifics that you're going to get to us, the one piece that I'd like to add to that, I was very interested in your comment about leveraging the U of M research and how we can turn that into jobs. I think that's a key thing for us to do. We're this global mobile society, largely because of the great technological advances we have, and let's use that to take advantage of what the great research that's going on at the U. Are there some specifics that in that regard, things that we can do?
I think there's been a lot of conversation recently. We invited President of the University to join the Minnesota Business Partnership specifically to facilitate closer cooperation. And I know there's been a number of initiatives at the university. I think, you know, some of it is, you know, universities traditionally don't foster great risk-taking environments. And so, you know, this is usually contrary to university and to type of research. And I think the university, this isn't easy for anyone, but I would say we are particularly missing the boat when you consider all the great work that's done there. So the work that's, you know, it's a huge boon in still food sciences, right? And a number of the engineering sciences, number of areas. We have a cooperation as a company with the university, but if you want to go license technology, right, it is much easier to do it with the private sector and with other companies than it is through a university. And so the university is just going to have to, I think, become more familiar with what the business practices are. That's their words, right? So some of this is just fostering it, but the university, I think, is going to be most important in terms of driving it and deciding that's the right thing to do. And the research that is licensed is too often licensed out of the state.
Yes, and we want to check into that, too, and find out. Is it venture capital, or what is it that we need to do here? Thank you. I look forward to that.
Thank you.
And my apologies. I skipped Senator Peterson. And I know you had your hand up earlier, so.
Yeah, that's fine, Mr. Chair.
My apologies.
I forgive you. I think Mr. Weaver can answer my question. If Mr. Baker needs to leave, you know, we all know that Mr. Weaver is being paid to hear. But Mr. Brown, I know you're making a significant contribution to the church today, and I appreciate your time as well. If you need to leave, my question focuses. My exposure has been primarily to small business employers that have 200 people or less, and there is a very growing disparity and a significant concern among small employers.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.
About the difference in compensation between private sector and employees that work for the government. For example, I hire dump truck drivers, for example, and when I slide my offer from my company across the table, and if the best dump truck driver in St. Cloud has a chance to go to work for me or go to work for the city of St. Cloud or to work for the state of Minnesota, I think you can understand that I'm probably going to lose out on being able to hire the best dump truck driver. In your research here, has there been any concern among large employers in that same arena in terms of the size or the growth of compensation within government and the ability to compete for good employees, as we all hear about this shortage of workers that we're going to have moving forward in the next couple of decades here?
Mr. Weaver, you've taken the handoff now, so
got the handoff.
You're on your own.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Senator Peterson, we looked at that primarily, and I've worked for both. I mean, personally, I've worked both for the state, the county, and the private sector. It used to be that the benefits that the public sector employees got, even though their initial wages were less, the benefits outweighed it, and as a result, there was still an incentive to work for the public sector. We've looked at that more in the term of the pension. I mean, I think that's the biggest issue right now that you see being talked about are the pension differences. And can we afford to pay public employees 90-95% of their salaries for the rest of their lives when they retire at 55? I mean, I think that's the public policy challenge. I don't think from a recruitment, retention perspective that's become a big part of the topic, but I think it's clearly a fact that particularly at the federal level, that those salaries have escalated far in excess of what the private sector is able to pay.
Thank you.
Senator Daley, I don't know if your question left the room or if it turns into a comment, but you can take a shot at Mr. Weaver, too.
A little bit of both.
Senator Daley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Weaver, for everything that you've done with the Itasca Project, with what Mr. Baker has done with that, with your vision, your efforts. You mentioned that there are two things that you're going to be working on. That's develop a regional vision, strategy and approach for economic development, and to enhance entrepreneurship and innovation. And you're not just a constituent here. In my mind, I view you as a partner. So I'd like to ask you, and you don't have to answer it today, but going forward, to think about how we can partner with you, what we can do to do our part to help you achieve that vision. The other is I was going to ask Mr. Baker, if he were to start up the business today, would he locate here in Minnesota? And what's the decision-making criteria that he would look at to make that decision? Would he locate the business here today? So maybe it's not Ecolab, but you're in conversation, in consultation with many of these other top 100 businesses that are in Minnesota. So on behalf of all of them, could you take a stab at that question? Would they locate here today?
Sure.
And what are those decision-making criteria that they would consider?
Mr.
Sure,
Weaver.
Senator Daley, Mr. Chair, actually we've got, and I'll make this available to the full committee, back in 2009, we passed out when the Senate and the House were debating a tax bill that raised taxes, got rid of some of the things we talked about, the foreign royalty deduction, for example, that was discussed earlier, eliminated that. We went to some of our companies and asked them that question. Would you stay in Minnesota if this law were enacted? Let me just read you a couple quotes from some companies that you'll all recognize. Red Wing Shoes, David Murphy, from the CEO of Red Wing, said, "We want to keep our hometown factory open and running, but I cannot, in good conscience, continue to operate in Minnesota when it becomes increasingly uncompetitive for other U.S. plants and production offshore. Robert Switz, who's the CEO at ADC, said of the 10 plants and over 2,000 jobs, only one is in Minnesota. That plant has been here for over 40 years, and I doubt I would build it again, given the business, property, and employment tax burden here in Minnesota. Kathy Marinello, who's the CEO of Ceridian Company, that make discs and things, said, we're considering relocating a very profitable business unit that generates over $100 million in revenue, but we will not move it to Minnesota. Tennessee and Florida are the likely locations if we make such a move, and our main motivation is tax-related. So I'll be happy to give that to all the committee members. But so I think the answer is, in most cases, RCOs would not locate a business here if they had their choice today, simply because the cost of doing business here is so extraordinarily high, and the regulatory environment is tough, and frankly, the human capital side is not as strong as we used to be. It used to be that companies would come to Minnesota only because we had a great workforce, and we still do have a really good workforce, but we aren't as good as we needed to be. The front page of the paper today talks about the most recent education report showing that Minnesota, we aren't producing the level of students and the quality of students that we used to produce. That's also a big factor in for companies to decide whether to expand here or stay here or move here is the quality of the workforce, and we aren't keeping up there either.
Senator Daley, are you finished with him?
Yes.
Thank you, and I really look forward very sincerely to finding ways that we can partner as leaders for the state of Minnesota to help make this a place where businesses do want to locate.
Senator, and that was the first part of your question, and I'll just quickly respond to that. There are very specific ways. You touched on them. The three ways, I'd say, is number one, help us create a tax climate that's competitive. So get at the tax rates that right now are onerous and cause businesses not to stay here. Number two, regulatory environment. You can do something about that. And to Senator Tomasoni and what Mr. Baker said, is it's not the regulations that are the problem. It's the enforcement of the regulations. If I'm going to expand a Target store and I need a water permit because there's a wetland there, why should I have to go to four different agencies for that permit? That's a tangible, specific example I can give you that happens every day in Minnesota. So it's not getting rid of it, but how about if we just get it in one spot? So get the agencies to work together. And I think Governor Dayton has said specifically that's something he'd like to get at too. So hopefully that's an example of where the private sector can work with policy leaders to be just smarter about it, not getting rid of regulations that keep our water clean or our air clean, but just make it smarter.
Well, and Senator Daley and members, you know, we're starting to mix the conversation here, which I think is fine and healthy, but I had specifically asked the Itasca folks to come in, and Mr. Baker was excited to take the lead on that. So at some point, it might be appropriate if the members would like to have a more formal and full presentation from Mr. Weaver's organization, the Minnesota Business Partnership, or some of his members. I've not asked him to prepare for anything like that today, but he's usually good to go at a moment's notice anyway. So a couple of at least one more housekeeping note for members. Senator Cohen, thank you for coming today.
And you're welcome, Mr. Chairman. I had to take care of my business.
Good. I hope it's growing.
At least as ordered by Judge Flynn, I had to take care of my business. So,
did you have a comment or question, Senator Cohen?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I realize I've come in late, but I understand Mr. Weaver has not been testifying for more than a couple of minutes. Can I ask a couple of questions? Because obviously...
Absolutely. I just want to let you know, Mr. Cohen, that the context was we had a PowerPoint from the Itasca project.
Right.
Mr. Baker had to leave just 10 minutes ago, so Mr. Weaver's been stuck at the microphone, which I think he's fine with. But go ahead, Senator.
Well, Mr. Chairman, with apologies, because to both Mr. Weaver, to yourself, and to committee members for the lateness that I couldn't help. I thought the court appearance would be done about an hour ago, and it was not.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Weaver, because we had some discussion about this at the first committee hearing a couple of days ago, or last week. And so I'm going to ask more directly, because as I got in, you were testifying relative to concerns about permitting
in the state. To be blunt, Mr. Weaver, you were chief of staff to the governor for about a year, year and a half. Did you and the governor discuss the permitting problem and what was done about it? Because I think what I indicated in response to questions from Senator Lilly and Senator Kroyth at the first committee hearing, that I've started to hear about this quite a bit the last couple of years, and I wondered, why wasn't this taken care of for something as simple as going to an agency, to a commissioner, and saying, here's what we're doing. This is an impediment to business in the state of Minnesota, and we're going to correct it. What's been going on the last 8 years?
Mr. Weaver.
Senator Cohen, Senator Michelle, well, I blame Bob Schroeder. I don't know what he was asleep at the switch, the last chief of staff.
Mr. Chairman, can we have Mr. Schroeder?
We'll bring him in.
No, Mr. Weaver, I think you have a more complete response.
I do, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cohen, it's something I think that has been around for years, and I'll happy to take responsibility for not driving that hard enough, because it's certainly been something I think we talked, even when I was in the legislature here, we talked about it then. How can we streamline these regulations and make them more easy to navigate and more transparent and faster to get through? I know that when I was with the governor, we talked with the DNR and we talked with the PCA, and we hired those commissioners about this and several other. The feds are also involved in a lot of the water stuff, and we just didn't get it done. So I know there were initial discussions about it, how we can do it. I think that kind of the work of the day, ultimately, it wasn't a priority for anybody, the cap at the legislature or the governor's office, to drive it. And that's why I think it's great now that the legislature, the governor, everyone seems to be focused on this.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me make the comment that I hope that
Senator Cohen.
What Mr. Weaver has indicated is going to be correct. I'm hoping that Governor Dayton will jump on this, and I think he's indicated that he wishes to do that. And I also recognize, and I should add, Mr. Weaver, the reason I asked you, we had some extensive testimony from Mr. Olson, Mr. Blazer, relative to that at the first committee hearing, so your comment follows up on that. And I know, you know, Mr. Olson, for instance, testified about concerns at the PCA, and I realize, I don't want to be totally disingenuous about this, and I recognize that some of these concerns go back probably to the Nixon Clean Water Act, I think when a lot of that started. So that's, you know, 40 years in the making. Mr. Chairman, if I could ask a different question, Mr. Weaver, because I noted with interest, is it the legislation you introduced yesterday? I take it it's your legislation. And in my perfect world, I'm not sure I disagree with the need to maybe take a look at where business taxes are in the state. But I look at where we are in terms of this year's legislative session relative to the deficit and where we are with unemployment. Is there any study that will show direct cause and effect that if we reduce business taxes by $50 million, we can recognize a drop in unemployment of 1.5% or, you know, whatever the variations might be? Hmm. Is there any literature that we can point to that shows what we can expect by way of re-employment and additional employment?
Yes, Senator Cohen, Senator Michelle, I'd be happy to share that with you. For example, there was a Tax Foundation report in 2005 that said specifically, I'm quoting from the report now, due in large measure to the sensitivity of the corporations to tax rates, Lee and Gordon, who were the researchers on that, found that reductions in statutory corporate tax rates have a significantly positive effect on economic growth rates. So there is a cause and effect, at least according to them, and I think other studies that show if you lower the corporate tax rate to become more competitive, and as a result, it will generate economic activity that will generate new jobs.
And is that quantified?
Senator Cohen.
Senator Cohen, Mr. Chair, yes. Now, I don't know that you can – to follow up, I don't mean to say I can tell you it's going to be – if you reduce it 2 points, that's going to be 2,000 jobs, and 3 points would be – no. But they did find a correlation between generally increased economic activity as a result of lowering the corporate tax rate.
Mr. Chairman, I know you were just – as I walked in, launching into, you know, matters of interest for the committee or housekeeping matters.
Senator
Cohen. So I won't belabor this, but as we get –
give you one more shot.
No, it's not a shot. I'm just going to – no, not at all. But as we get into a further discussion, I assume in this committee relative to your legislation or other kinds of similar efforts, I'm hoping we can see some literature, maybe comparative to other states, that State X lowered corporate taxes by Y amount, and over the 2 years they created X number of jobs. And I realize it gets a little bit difficult to the extent that if you take, say, a period of high growth in the economy, say the latter part of the 90s, that was it what was going on generally, or was it as a consequence of what that state did? But to the extent we can see some comparative stuff, I think that would be helpful.
Well, and Senator Cohen, I think that's great to kind of put those who are not at the table but in this room on notice for the kind of facts and figures and statistics that I think would be very helpful as we move forward. Senator Torres Ray, was that your hand up?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I wanted to see if I could ask you and also you, Mr. Weaver, and you, Mr. Chairman. I think there's a couple of issues that I think are interesting, and to the question that you asked, Senator Cohen, I've been reading about the case of Houston. In the case of Houston, they did something similar. There's significant growth because they lowered the corporate tax, and there's infusion of dollars. They, however, have now a deficit of $27 billion. It went from $4 billion to $27 billion. So there are some cases that we can study. But there are two issues that I think were mentioned in the previous presentation about developing a regional vision, strategy, and approach for economic development. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm very interested in figuring out how do we bring the voices of small businesses and diverse businesses that invest in depressed communities, like urban core, small rural communities, and how they have been working in partnership with larger corporations. I think we have some models here in Minnesota that are very interesting. And I am very interested in figuring out how do we bring these to the table, because in Houston, what they did is that they created this kind of environment where everybody feels like this is their goal. Economic growth is what needs to happen. So from the person that is working as a janitor in a company to the CEO, that's kind of what is happening in Houston. And I think that we need that in Minnesota, where everybody needs to feel part of this need to grow. And I think that there are some interesting models in urban communities involving diverse communities and people of color in particular that have brought these to the state that are usually not involved in these presentations and not invited to contribute. So I would like to see more of that.
Well, thank you, Senator Torres Ray, because I'd like to help make that happen. And I'd like to work with you to identify who in the Twin Cities, who in Minneapolis that we can bring to that table to have that kind of conversation, because I think it's exciting. And I'd also enjoy hearing a little more about Houston and what they've had as their focus and what their successes have been and what can we learn. I mean, that is the great thing about having 50 states and then all these economic regions is we can copy a little bit. We know we have to compete against them, but when they've found some things that work, we can use some of that too. So I appreciate your comments this morning.
Chairman,
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, just on the rules and regulations, I mentioned it the other day at the meeting that this committee has been reaching out to our business community for the 4 years I chaired this committee. I dug out, I think, Mr. Chairman, no less than six letters that came from my office to the business partnerships, to the chamber, to Hickey's group, whatever that is, to the local chamber of commerces. How can you help us with rules and regulations? This is not a new issue. I did not receive one response from anybody, because I can't do it myself. So I'm reaching out to the business community particularly to help us with no response. So we've been trying is what the point I want to make this morning. And it's not that, and I'm in the business community myself, and I want to get these burdens lessened, and I'm with you, but help us.
And thank you, Senator Metzen. And let me, let's try together. Yeah. And I'm not familiar with any past letters or history, but
I'm going to get those to you this afternoon because I think we're meeting. So this is I brought it up, Mr. Chairman, at the last meeting. I didn't elaborate on it, but this is not new. It's not new to this guy either.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think
that's
Mr. Weaver.
Senator Cohen?
Helped. It's Mr. Schroeder's fault.
I think. Oh! There, you cleared it up. It's not, Weaver and I are good friends, so it's not your fault. I understand.
Senator Peterson?
Did you hire him, by the way?
Senator Peterson.
I think some of the concerns around the regulations can be summed up. You know, I have a customer, a landscape customer, that made a comment to me that very communicated this message very well. He's a small contractor, less than $500,000 in business. And you know what he told me, Senator Metzgen and others, is that, you know, he didn't care what his tax bill was when he had a job to go to the next week, the next month, 3 months down the road. When he had sales and had his schedule calendared full for the next several months, he didn't care what his tax bill was. But now, when that work isn't there, when we're in an economy that we are right now, those businesses have no choice but to look at their fixed expenses that are caused by the state of Minnesota. And that's why we're hearing it now, and I would agree. I can understand your frustration for not having response to those letters, but I think it's just the nature of the economy. And, Mr. Weaver, I think you do what your members ask you to do, you know, as an executive director. And I would say, I would argue that the members of those organizations had a job to do tomorrow. They had a job next week and next month, and it wasn't a concern of theirs. But now that income has dried up, those jobs have dried up, and they need to look at, they have no choice but to look at those fixed expenses. So I view this economy as a real opportunity to make structural changes in how we deliver state government to our business community. And I'm excited about this environment, even though it's challenging for us all, because there's a chance to do real significant work that is going to benefit our residents for decades to come if we can get it done.
I agree.
Thank you, Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I want to jump in?
I'm going to stick with my members for a second here, okay. Mr. Weaver. Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. as I'm looking through the Itasca project, it looks like this is really geared toward, I believe, a 13-county area around the metro area. And I guess I would also have a question about the outstate. I want to make sure we're not forgetting the outstate, because we have very unique problems along the North and South Dakota borders. I think most of us will recognize the fact that when there's a town on the Dakota side and on the Minnesota side, the town on the Dakota side is always growing. The one on the Minnesota side is not. I think we want to make sure that we're looking at the outstate, at the small towns. We have an awful lot of good workforce in outstate Minnesota that needs jobs as well. And I want to make sure that, even though I love everything I'm hearing about this Itasca project, I want to make sure that we're also paying attention to outstate.
Agreed, Senator DeCryf. Mr. Weaver, I'd give you a closing comment if you still want one.
Well, I just wanted to make sure that the record was clear that I did spend several one-on-one productive meetings with Senator Metzen, who I love to meet with. So it wasn't the case where we didn't,
yeah, you didn't totally
talk
know.
To him. So next time I'll make sure I also, in addition to meeting with him face-to-face, I'll also make sure I write a letter.
We love those letters, Mr. Chairman.
Good to have it for the record, Mr. Weaver. Members, one thing I wanted to get on your blackberries and calendars as we move forward today is January 28th, which is a Friday. We don't have a committee scheduled at that time, but I think we will. And I think we'll have a road trip, and I don't want to get into any more specifics, but I will tell you that we'll announce all specifics after I talk to Senator Tomasoni first. So that might give you a little hint about where we want to go and who we need to work with up. And I'll just leave it at that. So we will get more details to you and figuring out the logistics. We're talking about a joint hearing with the Senate Environment Committee as well. So just kind of pencil in January 28th as a probable road trip.
Senator Tomasoni, fill in the blanks for us.
Well,
you're not.
We're about to talk about it.
Mr. Chairman, is that the best we can do?
Well, we'll see how it goes.
If you said road trip, I was thinking, I don't know.
Something a little more inspired.
Island Park.
I was thinking Miami or something. Low tax climate.
Houston. Very good. Houston. Mr. Weaver, thank you, and please thank Mr.
Thanks,
Baker
Mr. Chair.
For us. Committee's adjourned.
Thank you, Senators.